You are Locked On Twins, your daily Minnesota Twins podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On. If you're listening live, sweet. If you're not, this is a recording on Locked On Twins. I'm here with Brandon Warren, the former host of Locked On Twins, joining me today to talk about these first place Minnesota Twins. Brandon, how you been since we last talked?
Not too bad. Hopefully you're doing well as well.
Yeah, and how fun was it to see yesterday at the home opener, Target Field? What was that?
I think we lost you here for a second.
Uh-oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can now. We lost you for
okay,
a
second. Okay, sweet. Oh, I might have cut out a little bit. Yeah, I was just asking your experience watching the game yesterday and how it kind of differed from 2020.
Yeah, I mean, fans in the stands is obviously a big difference, and I think, you know, it still leaves you wanting a little more, but you understand that where we are as a society, as far as how we're trying to combat COVID, kind of necessitates what they're doing right now. But baby steps, and it was certainly a good thing, and you know, the offense didn't leave us wanting too much more. 10 runs and 16 hits. It was a pretty impressive show of force by the Twins, and it, you know, you look at these last seven games, and they've been in all seven of them. That's pretty exciting for a Twins fan, I would say.
Yeah, and I know we were talking about this a little bit before the season. This was kind of in, like, the Twins, like, hype video. I don't know if you saw that, but they've kind of taken, I like it, they've taken this stance, like, keep overlooking us, you know, because I think in the offseason, like, the White Sox are the pick, right, to win the Central for a lot of main media outlets, a lot of people looking on. I get it. You know, it's the big names. We've talked about it all winter, but this team's for real, Brandon.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind. They're balanced. They've undergone some issues in terms of injuries, and they've withstood those, where if you look at the White Sox, and certainly they've played representative as well, they've dealt with injuries in the outfield, playing a first baseman /DH in left field, obviously not preferable. They've had Billy Hamilton and Nick Williams start games in left field already to this point. It certainly has not gone to plan, but as a couple of White Sox fans that I talk to regularly have said, they get to the point where they build a 23-24-man roster, but they don't finish it off. And then, two, they don't provide themselves any depth. And that's exactly where they're at right now, where they're going to need guys like Lance Lynn to go nine innings to give themselves what they need to win on a given evening.
It's such an interesting, like, makeup for a highly competitive team. Like, it's just such a different look to me of teams that we see who are really good. Like the Yankees in 2019, with all the injuries they had, and they still, I think, won 103 or 105, something crazy. The Dodgers are known not only for the top half of the roster, but also just insane depth. That's kind of where you're seeing the best, you know, most competitive World Series competitive teams going and having that depth for 162. It's just, I've watched a lot of Sox baseball thus far. It's been fascinating. I don't know how much you've watched, but what's your initial thought of Tony La Russa there in Chicago as we look at this divisional race with the Twins and Sox?
Well, I watched when the Mariners, so that would have been, what, Thursday night, I think, came back on them, and just the inflexibility for the team. It's a team that can steamroll you, but with any sort of adversity, they just kind of flake. You know, it's kind of liking it to myself. If you get me running, I'm hard to stop, but I can't zig or zag, and I don't have good flexibility in my joints. And that's kind of where they're at, where La Russa let, I think it was Matt Foster, throw a whole bunch of pitches and load the bases, and Kyle Seager unloaded them. And it was a classic case of a manager falling asleep at the wheel when his bullpen was basically rested, and he had all these matchups he could have taken. I think it was Aaron Bummer against Seager, which would have mitigated a lot of that disaster potential. And after the game, he admitted as much. And it's like, well, yeah, you know, you admit that you made a mistake. That's not really enough, though. And then people started pointing out, too, back in the World Series, I think it was 2011, he brought in Lance Lynn because he brought the wrong guy in and had him do a four-pitch intentional walk and then went and got the guy he wanted. It's just pretty classic for La Russa. And I think you and I could probably have seen it coming, that it was not going to be a very good hire. And it seems like it's really, really already kind of showing its lack of luster to this point.
It does. And where we're seeing it is where we thought we would when he was hired. It's the bullpen. Liam Hendricks, I think, has thrown one time. And then they, I thought it was really interesting. No,
he threw in that Seattle game too, which he did, was already,
yeah, they were down 8-4 already.
Yeah,
right?
It didn't make any sense.
Yeah, so he comes in and pitches the night just to get some work. Their $54 million free agent signing. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying to bring Liam Hendricks into the sixth inning, but I just think, like you said, bringing in Bummer would have made a lot of sense. And I also saw Mike Petriello tweeted that they're actually shifting like less than they ever have now, which is not. I mean, it's only been 7 games, and I don't know if that's a coincidence or not. Mm-hmm. But that's a good segue to the rest of the division. Here, Brandon, who's impressed you through seven? It's hard. We got to like think that it's only been a week full of games, but what have you noticed early, very early on with the rest of this division?
I think it's a lot of parity. I mean, teams are just kind of bashing their heads against each other. Detroit looked decent. They looked at kind of how I expected them to, but they have Jose Urena in the rotation. He's a mess right now, but mm-hmm. if they could count on Michael Fulmer, they would have him in the rotation. It's just a matter of he's on a long road back from significant arm issues. Chicago has been very Jekyll and Hyde. Cleveland, I just, again, don't know if they're going to score any runs, which they didn't to start the season. And I like Kansas City. Don't get me wrong. I think they've got some nice pieces, but I still think they're an incomplete bunch in the sense that I don't think they're going to compete to take down the Twins or White Sox at all, and they might have a tough time even staying with Cleveland. Again, that depends, though. If Cleveland can't score runs, you're looking at two teams that could win 78 to 82 games and be in the mix, you know, maybe play some interesting games in September, but not be in that division title conversation as the season winds down.
Twins alone in first place at 5-2 after seven. It's been a nice start. Like you said, they've been in all seven games. The offense has looked really good. A lot of my focus does go to the offense just because last year it was lackluster for a lot of the season. But this rotation, Brandon, with Matt Shoemaker and Jay Happ putting together some decent starts there, Shoemaker especially, and then that top three. I want to ask you, who do you think is going to have a better year, Jose Berríos or Kenta Maeda?
I'm going to go with Jose. I just think he has been absolutely unbelievable. And I like Maeda, don't get me wrong. I'm just not sure what he looks like over the span of 175 mm-hmm. or 180 innings, whereas we've seen it with Jose. And I also think, too, he's just taken his game to another level. I mean, he's struck out 20 of the 42 batters he's faced. That's just astonishingly good. Now, obviously, he's not going to keep that up. He's not Devin Williams or Josh Hader, but I think he's showing he can take it to another level again, too. He's got to show that he's not going to wear down at the end of the season or have that six-game stretch where he has like a 7 ERA that makes his ERA jump a half a run at the end of the year. But I think he's in a good place right now. And I think Kenta is going to be just terrific. But again, too, it's like asking which of your sons is the favorite one. Mm-hmm. You really don't want to pick. And so I think Jose is going to have the better season, but it's not going to be by a lot.
Well, you see a couple of these things, and we'll talk about the offense specifically in a bit, but if you see a couple of these things come together, if Jose takes that next step and Matt Shoemaker looks good and Michael Pineda is Michael Pineda, it's just hard to see how this rotation isn't going to be top three, top five in the American League again. And especially if he takes that next step and they have this 1-2 punch that's just unbelievable, and then you feel like they have some rotation depth as well. How do you feel about Dobnak's role, Brandon? It's been kind of odd to me, at least through seven games. I think the bullpen is really deep too, but long man, maybe not high leverage spots. What do you think about Dobber as that long relief option?
Yeah, I mean, it beats not being in the big leagues, but he hasn't really settled into a spot where I think he can feel comfortable knowing when he will and won't pitch. And again, too, that's part of that's the dynamic of being in the bullpen. You might work 3 days in a row and then not for five and then right. one on, one off. But Rocco tries to be really good about not getting guys up and sitting them down and then not bringing them in. So as much as he can, Rocco tries to be predictable and honest with these guys. But at the same time, too, the Twins have played seven very competitive games. So getting Dobnak into games has not exactly been the easiest task. And then, too, you know, you have a bit of a blow up, which, I mean, Akil Baddoo hit a grand slam off him, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. You know, that's going to bump your numbers up but there was no leverage. So it's not like it's going to make him look like he can't handle pressure or can't pitch in a jam when they need him, because they used him in extras in Milwaukee, if I'm not mistaken. So right now it's really hard to get a read on usage, and it's always going to be that way for a long guy. But I don't know if there's any sort of incentive for them to back off from that, because they're going to want to keep him relatively stretched out in case they need him. Again, J-Hap is 39 and Shoemaker's 34 and hasn't really made that many starts in the last 5 years. But, you know, it does make you wonder if it's the best way to use him right now. Now, with that said, I still think he'll probably make a handful of starts before the end of the season. But it is a weird kind of ether to be in for a guy who, weirdly enough, just signed a contract extension.
Yeah, I was thinking about it today. I think his role is going to be fluid through the years, depending on what they have. You know, I think some years he might start in the rotation. I think some years he might start in the bullpen. It's just one of those years where I think coming off the 60-game season, they wanted as many arms as possible. And I think that kind of pushed him down to that long man. But like you said, I think he's going to start a lot of games for the Twins this year. With Happ and Shoemaker on the back end. It seems like they're kind of piggybacking Happ and Dauber, so we'll see if we see him Monday, I think, is Happ's start. But Seattle, Saturday, Sunday, Boston for four, and then next weekend I think they go to Oakland, so they have a little California trip. But this schedule is pretty light, especially given the way the A's look right now. Let's talk about that bullpen. I think thus far I've been really pleased with how almost every single guy's looked. Who's impressed you the most through these first seven games out of the bullpen?
I think I saw Caleb Fielbar hit 94. I was looking through some StatCast stuff today just because I wanted to see if anybody had kind of peaked up that I maybe hadn't expected. And you got your Jorge Alcalas and your Hansel Robleses, and even Alex Colomé's like 96. It's got to be Robles, but I do have to say I'm impressed with Fielbar, because I would have never expected 94 to be on his radar at all.
BetOnline.ag is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports needs. You know, football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. There are real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Again, use promo code LOCKEDON. Yeah, and football is over, but listen, March Madness is one of the best times of the year to play and to bet. And BetOnline.ag has a really easy-to-use platform. It's easy to navigate, and you can bet on futures for Major League Baseball, too. If you think the Twins are going to win the Central, if you think the Twins are going to win the World Series, you can bet on both those things. If you think Josh Donaldson's going to win MVP, you can bet on that, too. Use promo code LOCKEDON at BetOnline.ag.
Now, with that said, I mean, Robles has just been as advertised, and then some. You can almost ignore that 2020 even happened with him, with injuries and small sample sizes and the fact that he got just obliterated. He looks like a guy who could be closing games right now. And so that leaves you with four options of guys who have significant late inning experience and four guys that Rocco can go to without really having people get too wound up about it. And unless it doesn't work, then of course, you know, the 2020 hindsight comes out. But for me, Robles has been just tremendous. The velocity especially has been very impressive.
He's electric, and something I really like and that I think they've used to their advantage thus far is that guys like Robles and Colomé, I think you can bring them in against righties and lefties. Like, I think Colomé with that cutter breaking bats, and then Robles has a great changeup. I mean, he's got just a solid three-pitch mix. I think you can bring him in against righties and lefties, and that kind of allows you to spot up Rodgers in certain areas with, like, Yelich coming up, Burshaw in that Milwaukee
series. Yeah, especially if it's an end of an inning, too. Like, if you've got Rodgers and only want to use him for one batter and you know that the rule precludes you from doing that, well, maybe you got two outs and Yelich is up and you know you can end the inning and only have Rodgers face him or Fielbar in that case, if you really want to go with a quote-unquote specialist type. But yeah, the way that they've attacked this bullpen with less about specialist guys and more about traditional righties who can still get lefties, I think your point is well taken that they've done a nice job stacking guys. And I think when we came into the season, we were kind of looking at it like, well, hopefully they have enough, because they did lose a fair amount of talent in Trevor May and even Matt Whistler, who's been hit around a little bit with the Giants, but Sergio Romo, Tyler Clippard. And two, it brings me to a good point. The Twins avoided a lot of minefields when it came to pitching.
They did.
In terms of, I'll probably write about this for Access Twins here in the next day or so. Easy for me to say. But you got James Paxton. Clippard is hurt. And Paxton's going to have Tommy John.
Yep.
Say it again.
Rosenthal.
Rosenthal, yeah, that was another big one that came up. Mm-hmm. And I think Kirby Yates was another one that they thought might be able to help at some point. And he's laid up. And there's a few. There's a few have varying levels of injuries, but the Twins have done a nice job to avoid that minefield. Now, whether that was just serendipitous or it was, yeah, maybe they didn't think this guy was going to pass the physical or was an injury issue waiting to happen. They've managed to avoid that, and you have to give them credit until you can't give them credit anymore, which, again, with pitching could be any time now.
We've seen guys in the bullpen like Rogers bounce back a little bit here early on from down year last year, and we've seen it in the lineup thus far, Brandon, with a lot of these guys. Mitch Garver has a huge day yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us felt this offseason that he would bounce back. To what level, I think, was the question. But when I was watching him in these first couple games, it looked a lot like 2020 Mitch Garver. But goodness, he looked good yesterday. Four hard hit balls. What do you think of this catching duo thus far? And what do you think the ceiling is for this duo?
Yeah, I was going to invoke a name. Keston Hiura was lost in that first series, and it hasn't looked much better since. And Garver was not that far removed from the weeds that Hiura was in. It was strikeouts where he just didn't seem like he had that confidence, 0-2, to go after pitches he would usually hammer, or he would get into counts he didn't like because he was being too selective on pitches that were really easy or really nice, you know, down the middle to begin the at bat. It felt like he was just out of sorts just a little bit. And then, yeah, yesterday he kind of turned that all on its head. And I think, you know, he's obviously going to say he doesn't want to carry a 263 on base percentage or anything like that. But when the swing starts to come, the respect starts to come, the walks start to come, and everything's going to round out. And I think when you look at his career numbers, you see a guy who's a pretty good hitter who just had a little funk that he couldn't get out of. With Jeffers, again, too, small sample size, he's looked so-so, not great, not bad. You know, no power numbers yet and not exactly hitting the cover off the ball. But the only thing I really wonder about with this platoon, if you want to call it that, is that there's no traditional split. Whereas with Jason Castro, he was left-handed and was a little better defender, whereas Garver was kind of the right-handed masher and was becoming a better defender, but I don't think you'd ever have put him on Jason Castro's level. Now, with that said, even if Jeffers is, we think, a better defensive catcher, and I think that's probably a defensible position to take, you're still not at a point where you're like, oh, okay, well, it's a tough lefty, so it's going to be Garver. It's a tough righty, so it's going to be this guy. It's going to be kind of hard to mix and match. And so, for instance, I got them in fantasy leagues. If you have both of them, you have to check every single day and be on your toes ready to make a replacement, because it doesn't mean, hey, Jose Berríos is pitching, and so Ryan Jeffers is going to be catching, or that sort of thing. So I'm glad I don't have Rocco's job in this respect, because it's kind of like if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. They have two really good catchers, and that might make it tough to give them both enough playing time. And with that said, too, if Miguel Sano continues to struggle, maybe Mitch plays a little bit of first base.
Well, the upside of the offense, like, if he's bouncing back, Garver, Sano, I have an article dropping at Twins Daily tonight talking about his early struggles and how a lot of his stuff is processed, you know, in recent years. He's struggled at the beginning of season, just kind of getting his timing back. But he's taking good at-bats for the most part. I think the upside of this offense is one that we've seen here in the first week. They're doing this, Brandon, without Donaldson, with a Sano who's not hitting the ball very well. Polanco's come around a little bit in the last couple of days, but it kind of excites you about how high this offense can go. And it was easy to forget how good they were, I think, and we're always going to anchor in 2019. But it's easy to forget the true massive upside of this offense. I think we've seen it here in the first couple games.
Well, and they won 36 games last year. Was that right? 36, 34? Mm-hmm. Yeah. 36 with an offense that was off kilter all year long. I mean, the consistency of it was just not there, but their pitching was good enough. But you look at it, and you're like, okay, well, maybe if you play 162 with that same bunch, Max Kepler snaps out of his funk, or any number of guys, or maybe Byron Buxton starts taking some walks and turns into a true superstar as opposed to a guy that was just mashing the ball. And it just, you know, you just look at it and you're like, and people won't believe you. Like, if you talk to White Sox fans, you say, yeah, basically the whole offense was off its game, and they'll say, yeah, you can say that, whatever. But it was pretty true. I mean, it was a weird 60-game sample. Nobody expected them to repeat 2019. But at the same time, too, 2020 was just such an anomaly, such a unicorn, that you can't really put much faith or stock in those numbers either. And I think the truth lies somewhere in the middle, as it seems to always when we're talking about that kind of stuff.
Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate and they're soft and easy to chew. Built Bar has 12 original flavors, but they've added 6 new flavors as well. And these improved Built Bars are even deliciouser. Plus, Built Bars are healthy. Built Bar is great for the health conscious guy. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. The bars are low calorie, low sugar, full of protein, full of fiber, and great for a keto diet. And the peanut butter bar, only 5 grams of net carbs for a type 1 diabetic like me. That is huge. Plus, right now, Built Bar has reset the promo code for this relaunch, so listen closely. You get a free cooler with your purchase while supplies last. If you go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15, you also get 15% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. My favorite flavors include the coconut almond, the peanut butter, the banana bread. Use promo code LOCKED15 at BuiltBar.com.
That's such a wrench in this. Is, I think, something that was so interesting going into 2020 is like, how are these guys going to respond to that great year? What are we going to get for an encore? I think when you mention White Sox fans, a lot of the argument against the Twins is the word was regression all offseason, that all that offense is going to regress, like a, you know, they're going to get hit by a truck by regression. And it kind of played into that narrative almost, where I had people saying to me like, oh, the league learned how to pitch to these guys. And I'm like, it's a really easy response to a shortened season where Mitch Garber played 21 games last year, I think it was. Like, I don't think that that's quite fair. And so I'm glad that, again, very grateful we have 162 this year to really see the full sample, what makes baseball so great. You had a tweet yesterday I liked, Brandon. Andrelton Simmons has been just awesome so far for the Twins, both sides of the ball. He's made some great plays at short. He seems like he meshes really well. I mean, Jorge Polanco and Luis Arraez seem like really easy guys to mesh with. But he's like, he's meshing well with the team. Offensively, he's been a really pleasant surprise. Defensively, he's as advertised. What do you think of Andrelton thus far, and what do you think he brings to this club?
Well, I think it's polish. I mean, he dropped that throw from Sano in Milwaukee, and I think that was one of the just – and you were there, I think, right?
Yep.
I want to say the ball went into the sun and then back out through one of the weird panels or whatever at the airplane hangar that they play in. But I like – I'm going to call it Miller Park because that's
– It's cool. It's a cool park.
It's cool. I like it. But I think we saw his level of defensive acumen – not only when he's fielding the ball on ground balls, because that's kind of the most obvious, but you look at his instincts on plays where he's doing like cutoffs and it's setting himself up to throw the second he gets it, quick release, all that stuff. And it was the, I want to say it was the second play where they threw out a runner at Detroit and he just had just a money throw from like short left field. You see that he's just a natural defensively. And I feel like he's just had a couple of those stabilizing plays where you maybe feel like it might have snowballed on a lesser shortstop. And I wink, wink, nudge, nudge, think about Polanco there, who I think Polanco, for the most part, started to pass the eye test last year. But still, again, you know, that thing against Houston happened. And it just kind of every now and then there'd be just kind of a wrinkle where you're like, oh, yeah, you got to have that. And I think he's hit a couple at second base already. But I think that stabilizing influence in the infield has been huge. And yeah, whatever he gives them with the bat is going to be definitely a plus. And with how much contact he makes, I think there's a wide range of outcomes for him too. I mean, if he hits 300, it's not going to be with a crazy on base percentage and a 500 slugging percentage,
right?
But he can be a guy who gives you like a 95 or a 100 weighted runs created plus, can be a league average hitter. And when he does that, he's like a 6 win player. I want to say a few years ago in L.A. of Anaheim, if you want to call it that. He was like a 5 or 6 win player via Fangraphs WAR because he had just an average bat and was unbelievable defensively. And, if you can get that, you'll take it. He's been an absolutely terrific stabilizing force. And I do wonder if his future will be in Minnesota, too. It'll be interesting to see what they decide at shortstop with that big free agent market coming up here.
This team's different. The offense is different. I compare this offense to 2019 when Cron and Scope were in the middle of that lineup, too. Mm-hmm. Kind of do or die sluggers. You know, this offense has more contact ability. And for those who have screamed in the last few years thinking that the problem, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but thinking that the problem is that they don't make enough contact. You know, they're always swinging for the fences. They're striking out too much. This team has a lot of contact, Brandon. Like Andrelton Luis Arraez, Polanco makes a lot of contact. I think Kepler's underrated in his contact ability and just ability to get on base. They got contact guys up and down this lineup now. It's a different look, and especially with him there at short, it's a different look and really makes the team deeper. We got a comment from Cade here. Twins money line every game will make everyone rich. Thanks, Cade. I want to ask you, Brandon, has your prediction changed for how many games you think this team will win? We've seen early on the negatives or the doubts that we have about this team, of the injuries, right? Just guys getting scares. But has your opinion changed at all, or did you expect them to kind of jump out of the gate here and show everyone what they're made of?
I everything that I think about before the season or that worries me is that slow start. And I want to say back in like 2005, 2005 that had, they had that really tough start and just never really got out of it. I want to say they started the season in Toronto, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, I always think about that because you do really give a big first impression. And so like with Oakland or Atlanta, fans get a little antsy, and the Mets too, especially since they didn't get to play and then they lost a few games. But at the same time too, no, I'm surprised that the first seven were all games they could have won. I mean, they could realistically be 7-0 if it wasn't for the Mickey Mouse overtime, overtime, extra innings rules. Sorry, overtime. I sound like a normie. The ref screwed up in overtime. No, but they've been so good and so competitive, and I'm not saying I'm surprised, but 5-2 after a week, weeks worth of games is really impressive. So it's a little better than I thought out of the gate, but I'm still sitting at 94 wins, maybe 95. But at the same time, too, I think the rest of the division has kind of shown what it's going to be like, which is kind of a dogfight with teams kind of jockeying for position. I think Chicago will separate itself. But if I think Chicago is anything more than like an 86 win team right now, I'd probably be lying to myself. I really fervently believe, and I've said this on a couple other appearances, the Twins are just that much better. They're 5 or 6 games at minimum better than the White Sox right now over the course of a full season. And I think we're already starting to see evidence of that.
Well, you just look at the bottom half of that Sox lineup and it kind of tells the story for you. But they've had a monster. There's been some really good stories here in the first week. Yermín Mercedes.
Yeah.
He kind of looks like Williams Astudillo, just in their, you know, stature and in their almost like what we've seen from Williams. Because Williams had a huge start to 2019, too, in similar fashion. Big catchers, but Yermín hit all the way through the minors. He's been a nice surprise for them. Of course, Akil Badu in Detroit. How much do you buy into these early season jumps, Brandon, in a full campaign?
I don't, but it's fun. You know, it's, yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of guys that are just going crazy. Evan Longoria turning back the hands of time. Tyler Naquin looks like a completely different player. Cedric Mullins is killing it for Baltimore. I mean, there's some guys who are really, really ripping it up. And at the top of that list, hitting .556 on the season is Yermín Mercedes. I think Mercedes could be decent. The kind of guy who, I mean, he's not going to catch because he is, I don't know how much different he is from Astudillo when it comes to catching, but they really don't want him to catch. And I don't think the Twins really want Astudillo either. But the White Sox have two guys who can't really catch because I don't think they really like Zach Collins back there either. So they went from having two guys they really liked with McCann last year, and they let Lucroy go this spring. I'm not sure what they're doing behind the plate, but Mercedes is a lot of fun. And Badu, I love Badu's skill set. He reminded me a little bit of Aaron Hicks because he was a guy who had a fun swing, took a lot of walks in the minors, athletic guy. I'm not sure he's got the ceiling Aaron Hicks does, but I can still say that I lament the Twins not having him, even though the process makes sense to me. I just think it would be nice to have him on the 40 right now, as opposed to maybe a Nick Gordon, someone like that. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a big Nick Gordon guy, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
But at the same time, too, I mean, you look at it now and you're like, well, he could have made it over Garlic. He could have made it over Cave. Yeah, fair. But you didn't really envision either of those guys or both of those guys and Rooker having to play left field on a regular basis to start the season. So I don't know. It's 6 of 1, half dozen the other. I think Badu is going to be a nice player, but I don't know that the Twins are necessarily going to miss him. It's not going to be Daniel Palka who hammers the ball for a while and then just disappears, but it's not going to be David Ortiz either.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it'll be like productive, maybe 2-3 win center fielder. He's really athletic, but awesome story there. And the Twins said that they're happy for him.
Yeah.
I want to talk about this American League, Brandon, too, early on. I think my sense coming into this year, I think the Yankees are clearly the best team in the American League if they can stay healthy. But we're already seeing like Judge is out of the lineup today, and Aaron Boone like refuses to say whether it's an injury or not. They have health problems. You know, that division's tough. Boston's offense has looked pretty good. I don't think they'll be able to pitch a whole lot, but you know, those teams could beat each other up. Is it a non-zero chance that the Twins could finish with the best record in the American League this year?
The Twins are the best team in the American League right now.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, I said it on, I think it was Ross Brendel's show. He's a guy who used to work with 1500/Score before their last group of layoffs. But great guy, great podcast. And I said unequivocally the Twins are the best team in the AL. I know Houston's 6-1. I don't buy into Houston at all. I don't think they have the depth they need after losing Springer and almost losing Brantley. Verlander's on the shelf. They got a lot of question marks. They also lost, was it Framber Valdez had the finger thing?
Yep.
So they've got some questions. You know, they went out and beat up on, if I'm not mistaken, the A's. Mm-hmm. But the A's are kind of a mess right now, and Trevor Rosenthal's hurt. Yeah, exactly. So I think the Twins right now are unequivocally the best team in the American League, and anybody who wants to fight me can meet me in Temecula.
Well, let's just, I mean, you got to look at the, like I said, this offense is missing perhaps, I guess, Buxton's probably their second best right-handed hitter now, but their second best right-handed hitter coming into the year, you know, and a good defender at third base. They're missing pieces here. I think Alex Kirilloff is going to be a mainstay when he comes as a middle of the order bat. They got help on the way too, and they have a system, and they have, you know, at the alternate site, they got a bunch of arms they can go to. It's just, you always worry when these guys are pulled out of the game, but we know, and it's almost like repetitive of saying it all offseason. We know if they can stay healthy, if Byron Buxton can stay healthy. And I want to finish with him, with you, Brandon, because it's just amazing. I get the chills, like thinking about what he's doing. He looks amazing. I mean, he looks like he is on his way to, you know, at the very least a career year. Try to put into words what it's like to watch Buxton just on fire like this.
Well, I saw Darren Wolfson tweet about George Springer hitting free agency. I think he was a couple years older and what he cashed in on. Now, to be fair, Springer's track record was better, but when you look at the talent level that Buxton is dealing in, and if he can stay healthy, I think you're looking at a guy who could reasonably tell the Twins with a straight face, I want 5 years and $100 million. And they'd probably give it to him. And that still might be on the low side. But I think it would be a loyalty thing, and I think it would also be a, you know, you have been a little bit injured in the past. We know you're really good. Because on the free market, if he has 2 years where he just blows up, I mean, you're talking about a guy who's he'll be 29, 28, and he could get $25 million a year easily.
Totally.
If he plays as well as he can. So I think a happy medium in there, if he really kills it, is a five-year deal for $100 million, and I think that they would do that without even blinking. If he's played 100 games by, August 1st.
It seems like he loves it. Like, it seems like he loves playing for, I mean, you never know, but it seems like what he said is he loves playing for the Twins. And it seems like that 2018 debacle's behind him a little bit, hopefully. And obviously the Twins love having him. Do you think that this front office is like, do you think that they're too, not conservative, but do you think that, maybe too conservative in like, we need to see what you're going to do this year? And then maybe they do that again next. Like, do you think that it should be a priority if he has, and this is a huge if, but if he has a, let's say he's on track to have a big year, let's say he's a 5-6 win player this year and plays 120, 130 games. Do you think that they should make it a priority to extend him at that point?
Oh yeah, I think they will. And it'll all come down to if he plays through this year without an extension, then maybe he wants to play next year without one, unless they blow his socks off. And again, I'm not sure 5-100 would blow his socks off. It might have to be 5-125. And I think that's awfully similar to what Springer got, and if not exactly what he got. And I don't think he can stand on that leg durability-wise, I guess pun intended, and statistics-wise. But he can in terms of youth and in terms of untapped potential. But I don't know that teams pay for untapped potential in free agency. I think they pay for superstardom, and then with untapped guys, they kind of try to nickel and dime them and hope that they can help them break out as opposed to paying for that possible breakout.
Yusei Kikuchi against Michael Pineda Saturday. Sunday is Chris Flexen, a right-hander for Seattle, against Matt Shoemaker. Should be a fun end of this series. And then four with Boston. I'm curious to see how this rotation does with Boston, just because it looks like JD Martinez. I was on record saying JD Martinez is washed, just watching him in the spring training and after last year. But I think we're going to see like a lot of these guys who struggled in 2020, guys that we know can hit, coming back and hitting the ball this year like JD is. That offense is awesome. Brandon, thanks so much. I want to have you on again soon. We'll talk Twins, but this is just an exciting start. It's just fun to watch Twins baseball, and it feels more normal than it has certainly since they lost to the Yankees in Game 3. But, for people listening, you already know Brandon, but just to remind everyone, where can they find your work at Access Twins and then your Twitter?
Yeah, so accesstwins.substack.com and at Brandon_Warren. And I should give a shout, too, to the Locker Room app. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, and we're doing it every week, so I want to bring you back on again soon.
Sure, sure.
It's a long season, you know, but thanks, everyone, for joining us today, and we'll be talking Twins again with Brandon soon. Thanks, Brandon.
You bet.